We go to the Revel Wireless Hotline now to be joined by Jason Cole of YahooSports.com, covers the NFL there. Jason, I want to start with your thoughts on the Browns draft, just in general, what you see them doing, and it wasn't much in terms of total players. We're only talking five guys, but particularly with the pickups of Barkevious Mingo, Leon McFadden, how much do you think the Browns helped themselves?
Well, look, I think so much just depends on what kind of player is Mingo. Is Mingo what everybody thinks in the next sort of Javon Curse kind of athlete who can come in and be a dominant pass rusher right away and this dynamic athlete who you have to sort of redraw the X's and O's for and really, you know, harass as an offense? Or is he the downside, which is kind of an inexperienced football player with, you know, inconsistent, you know, production? You know, a lot's going to hinge on Mingo. If he's a great player, this is a great draft. If he's a mediocre player, it's a mediocre draft. It's all really on him because you have so few players. I will say this. I give him a lot of credit for getting Josh Gordon a year ago, so give him some credit on that one. That was their second-round pick. I think that Josh Gordon, when you put him up against a lot of the receivers who are in this draft, he measures up very, very well. I put him up against a guy like a Tavon Austin and just say, look, I'd almost rather have Gordon because of the size. So that's a really valuable pick. McFadden, I think, is going to come in and play and be a productive guy. Is he a number one? Probably not. But, you know, you got Hayden. You know, they're in pretty good shape there.
Yeah, you talk about McFadden, and a lot of folks point to the height thing that maybe just under 5'10", he isn't tall enough to make an impact. But there were some who had a second-round grade on him, actually, Jason. I don't know what your pre-draft research was on McFadden, but there were some people who just said, despite the lack of height, that there's a player there.
Yeah, there's a player there. I mean, you're going to have to play off coverage with him a little bit more, and you can't get up and bump with him as much as you'd like. You can't put him in bad situations too much. But, look, he's a capable player. This is a deep, deep draft for corners. That's one of the reasons he fell a little bit in the eyes of some. But, look, again, you're talking about your number two corner, not your number one corner. And when you've got a great number one corner like they have in Joe Hayden, you know, you can go get a guy like McFadden, and you're pretty well set at that position.
Now, as we broaden this thing out a little bit and talk about the idea of making trades for next year and dealing away those fourth and fifth round picks for third and fourth next year, as you look big picture at the draft, can you see longer term the idea that next year would be a better year to have more of that ammo, whether it's for actually making picks or for packaging up some picks to make a trade?
Oh, it's a huge year because it's a much, much deeper year with impact guys. I think some people say that there was maybe five or six impact guys in this draft. You look at next year, it's double, maybe triple that, especially start talking about a very, potentially very deep quarterback class. You know, you got Taj Boyd, you got Bridgewater, see how people think of Manziel, you got the Fales kid out of San Jose State, you've got Derek Carr, who's David Carr's little brother, out of Fresno State. You know, those are five guys right off the top who, you know, could end up being first-round prospects. And so I'd like to have, if I'm a team like the Browns, where I've got a significant question at quarterback, and I don't know if those guys, either one of the guys who's there is going to work out long-term, and I probably have a severe amount of doubt about it. Yeah, I'd like to be armed with as much ammo as I possibly can to move around as much as I can. Or, even if it works, and all of a sudden Brandon Weeden becomes that, you know, kind of starter that you want, or even Jason Campbell becomes that guy, all right. You know, there's guys like, you know, there's Jadeveon Clowney and a bunch of other impact defensive players that I can go out and get. So I think next year's draft is rich with prospects and probably rich with prospects that the Browns really, really need, specifically, most likely, quarterback.
You mentioned Josh Gordon earlier, and you're right. You have to look at the 2013 Browns draft with him included as the second-round pick that they gave up to get him in that supplemental draft last July. That said, the Browns took what looks like a pretty big step to enhance themselves at the receiver position by picking up Devon Bess, even though there wasn't much given up in trade. They acquired someone at a need area. Slot receiver really was a spot that has had a question mark on it for the Browns. How much do you think Best can do to fill that spot? How much help can he bring the Browns?
Best is a pretty good player. Don't mistake him, though, with like a Wes Welker. I mean, he's not that. And he's not explosive after the catch. He's really good getting open, quick routes. He can get you six. If you need five, he'll get you six, a fair amount of the time. And he's going to do a nice job. But you need to have better receivers next to him to make sure that he gets one-on-one coverage. And you're going to have to probably deal with one, period of probably two or three games where, he goes into a little bit of a slump in terms of catching the ball. Because he'll do that, go for a stretch of a couple of weeks where he'll just have some drops. That's what's been his sort of the note on his career early on. Good player and helpful, but not truly a game changer. And even as a slot guy on third down situations, like he's nothing like Joe Jurevicius was. I mean, and not just size wise, but effectiveness wise. And Jurevicius was really, really good at reading coverages and getting open. And that one sort of magical year when they won 10 games under Romeo Crennel, Jurevicius was so good on third down. And he did a nice job of setting up Winslow and Braylon Edwards and that whole offense and working well with Derek Anderson. Devon's not even in that class in my view. Good player, but not great on third down.
Jason Cole of YahooSports.com, where he covers the National Football League, joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Bigger picture for the draft, Jason, there's going to be a discussion for a long time, I think, in the AFC East about which team got the better of the two quarterbacks, the two of the more talked about quarterbacks in this draft, E.J. Manuel, the Bills, 16th overall, or the Jets going down the road of Geno Smith later on. And I think that this is so interesting because Geno Smith was the headline act, and he's going to the headline act team in the Jets for whatever that's worth. And on top of it all, now the Jets and the Bills get to find out pretty much twice per year whenever this begins of who got the better.
Yeah, it's really, this one's fascinating because I will tell you this, it comes down almost entirely to personality. E.J. Manuel just did such an exceptional job of impressing people with his leadership ability and his patience and his maturity, and just the opposite is true of Geno Smith, who physically is more gifted than E.J. Manuel, but, wow, just not, is more like a 17-year-old kid and I'm not saying that Geno Smith can't get there, but he's really not there yet. And if you're not there yet and you're going into a place like New York, boy, your buttons could get pushed in a serious hurry. Serious hurry. That first time you throw three interceptions, because they all do it, the first time you throw three interceptions, we'll see how the Jets faithful treat you.
Well, and then that goes to this, the point of who just left there in New York and Tim Tebow. And there's been, I'd say, more discussion. I can't remember any discussion level coming close to that of a potential, at best, backup player out of work in the National Football League. There are a lot of out-of-work players in the NFL. No one getting the kind of discussion that he is. You think of Charles Woodson, who could be a Hall of Fame consideration someday, and his name doesn't come up. And now you think of Tebow, and even now Shad Khan, the owner of the Jaguars, because that's the team a lot of folks we know want him to, where they want him to be, the whole petition being submitted to President Obama over this. It's just turned into such an insane story, and now that his just the whole thing just fascinates me, and maybe I don't know, makes my head explode at times.
Let me try and calm your potential exploding brain.
Thank you.
Nobody wants that. Look, I live in Gainesville, Florida,
yes.
And I live in the South, so I get it. Okay, I mean, I don't fully comprehend it all the time, but I get it. So. Like, he's just like, you're talking about, kind of a cult hero. I mean, and Tim, you know, and the hard part about this is Tim is really a genuinely good person.
Mm-hmm.
A really, really genuinely good person whose career has been mishandled terribly poorly by everybody around him. I'm talking about the teams that drafted him, you know, when Josh McDaniels took him in the first round and they put an expectation on him rather than wait till the second or third round by playing him in that, you know, that offense in his second year in the league that really doesn't function long term, to never really learning how to be an NFL caliber quarterback and operate traditional offenses. I mean, it just doesn't really work. And that's why, you know, this question about whether he'll ever be able to play in the NFL again. At the same time, you know, he's such an advocate for the group that's behind him, and he's so earnest about it. And people want to believe that he's, you know, he's great, and they want to believe that he's going to overcome this because they want their own faith in some ways to be, you know, to be backed up by his success.
Validated, yeah.
And that's a really hard one for people to cross over when they realize, you know, when they hear that he can't play and they take that as an attack on him. And that's where, like, his fans are out of control more than, it's not Tim. His fans are really the ones who are
right.
out of control.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a fair way to look at it. Interesting story out of Atlanta. Linebacker for the Falcons, Sean Weatherspoon, was talking to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and saying that during the course of one day of offseason workouts, most of it from a defensive perspective was devoted to stopping the read option or dealing with it. Do you sense that is – Mike Smith, I mean, is obviously one of the better coaches in this league and a defensive-minded guy trying to look around the corner. Can you get a drift just from who you've spoken with around the league that – there is this, that more of this is going to happen, that teams just have to spend more time defensively doing something in light of all the read option stuff we saw last season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, it's part of the game. You've got, you know, a bunch of really athletic quarterbacks who can throw it really well between, you know, Russell Wilson, RG3, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, these are explosive athletes. Who are running this offense. I mean, there are going to be some other guys who come along. You know, Manziel, if he makes it in the NFL, you're going to have to deal with him in this kind of an offense. He's not quite the same kind of long-distance runner that, say, Kaepernick is, but you got to be prepared for it, and you have to have a plan. And one of the things is, it's like anything, you spend an entire day, an entire week on it during the offseason so that you have a plan ready to install when you get to the regular season. Because you're not going to spend a lot of training camp on this stuff, okay? And if you get into the season and you haven't gone through a week of install on this defense, if you're doing it for the first time, sometimes, you know, guys can forget how they're supposed to do it, and they, you know, all of a sudden they're thinking instead of just reacting. So you want to spend a lot of time right now, you know, learning how to just react to playing against this offense. And the other thing you have to do is you can't really show the same defensive attack, you know, system, you know, time after time after time, because then the read option quarterback will figure that out and he'll adjust. So what you have to do is you have to install four or five different ideas that you alternate from time to time when you see this. And the thing about it is you may not see it. You just have to be prepared for it, because the beauty of San Francisco against Green Bay in the playoffs is they hadn't run that offense for weeks. And then they bring it out against Green Bay, and Green Bay just was not ready for it. So that's why you have to spend time now doing it and not necessarily during the season, because you don't know when it's necessarily going to happen.
Makes sense. Jason, outstanding. Thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Anytime. Be good. Thanks, Vic.
He is Jason Cole from YahooSports.com. Covers the National Football League, and he joins us on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, and we've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.